Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Kate and I'm here with Chris and Kristen, and this week we are continuing our discussion of From a Certain Point of View, the collection of short stories celebrating the 40th anniversary of A New Hope. And this time we're going to be talking about Change of Heart through Time of Death, and I can't remember who the authors are on those stories because I am bad. It's Elizabeth Wine and Kevin Scott. Is it Kevin or Kevin?
I got no idea.
Whatever.
We could have put that in the outline. Maybe I'll do that next week. Why do we not just put it in the outline?
Well, Chris literally just made the outline, and apparently he didn't think that was important information to have.
Well, that's not a surprise.
I knew the authors.
All right. You're a fucking asshole too, Chris. sorry. It is December 13th. It's not when the episode is coming out, but it's the day before Star Wars The Last Jedi comes out. So everybody's a little on edge.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, far more importantly than it being episode 30 of the Book Wars Pod, in 24 hours, Kate and I will be in a theater watching Last Jedi. Keeks, did you get tickets for opening night?
I have to go see Jay-Z tomorrow. Don't tell anybody, even though it's the podcast.
To go see Jay-Z. God, the sacrifices.
No, like, I've had this conversation with several people who are friends of both, and they're like, everybody's split down the middle because he's only here for one night and I've never seen him. So,
no, so fucking funny. Like, Last Jedi is important, but you can see it three other nights this weekend and still.
And I'm probably going to see it twice this weekend.
Like, I would say it's going to be like open season on spoilers, so I would like stay away from anything with an internet
connection. I am deleting Twitter from my phone.
I deleted notifications. I had already, like, I've been on a Twitter blackout since last Thursday, and last night I deleted notifications because I was like, I don't want anything happening.
It helps because I don't actually follow that many accounts that I don't know personally, and I know, like, all of our kind of like smaller circle, they're not being fucking assholes. So
no, of course
helpful.
Not. Yes, well, exactly.
Apparently some asshole was going around to, like, people in Star Wars Twitter. DMing them spoilers.
You fucking pieces
of
shit.
He wasn't DMing them spoilers. His fucking actual Twitter handle was a spoiler.
Oh my God.
It was, so they couldn't even tell. So, like, you know, people couldn't even tell us who to block because they would have just said it.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like, I saw it and I was just like, oh, okay, you just put it right out there, because I'm like one of three people in the universe who doesn't care about spoilers. So I was just like,
yeah, I don't care that much either. Me and you are so funny. We're just like, it's gonna happen anyway.
I know. So I saw that and I was just like, oh, if that's, I mean, for all we know, this isn't even a true spoiler. We'll do a postmortem after we see the movie. But I was just like, if that happens, I wouldn't be surprised. If it doesn't happen, then I would also not be surprised. But also, what the fuck is this? Where are you getting your information, you fucking asshole?
Yes. Anyhow. Well, what are we drinking?
What are we drinking?
I'm drinking kombucha.
Oh, yum. Kate made it, yes?
Correct.
Good.
Is my Yum. Creation. I'm also having kombucha, but I'm also having gin because I contain multitudes.
Are they mixed together?
No, ew.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
That'd be foul. Although
it wouldn't be that bad.
Actually, I saw a recipe for a cocktail with kombucha and rum, and that actually sounds really good.
Yeah, that does sound good. We have a big ass bottle of Mount Gay that somebody gave us that we were staying with us, and we haven't used it yet because it's like sad winter here. So we'll have to do like some, I don't know, some fun cocktails with it.
Yeah.
For tropical times. But it's been sunny here for like 2 weeks because global climate change. So who the fuck knows?
It's snowing here literally right now.
Yeah.
So
that's even a little bit early for you guys. So.
Exactly.
Drinking yet another Fort George beer. As I've mentioned before, they are my favorite brewery in Oregon and they're out of Astoria. So the beer is called City of Dreams, and it's basically like a pale ale. but it's one of their new ones, and it's got some really cool art on the can. It's like some, it actually looks a lot like my tattoo. It's like good line work. So that's fun.
Hey.
It doesn't look quite like my tattoo, but it's got like the same water swirlies as my tattoo does. So maybe I'll make Quinn take a picture of me and my tattoo in the can.
That'd be awesome.
But, yeah. But it's actually really good. I think it's going to be in their year-round lineup now. So it used to be, I believe in previous releases, it was... like an East Coast style IPA. So it's still kind of kept that, but they've changed it a little bit. So it's not quite as hop forward and bitter just to be a regular pale. It comes in at like 5.5%. So,
but that's always like the best when like something that was a seasonal beer, I almost said a seasonal pod. Seasonal pods, man, they're just so exclusive. When something's a seasonal beer and then they like change it to an everyday beer. I remember when Port City did that with something recently, and it's just like the greatest thing in the world.
Ooh, I want to know what it was if you remember it later, because
I don't. Well, if I remember it during the podcast, I will tell you. As of right now, I'm not hiding it from our listeners. I actually don't remember what it was.
I figured. I wasn't saying you were. I was just excited because Port City makes great beer.
I'm actually just hiding it from specifically one listener. You know who you are at Real Baby Bird. Everybody else can know what kind of beer it is.
Good one, Chris.
Oh my god.
Also, JK Miranda, we love you.
Who is leading the discussion?
Not me.
I can.
Chris can do it. You made the outline. Well, and I like read the outline beforehand for once, but
Who the fuck are you?
I was just these outlines are very funny because they're just like brief statement,
yeah, and then like episode story
and
titles.
Then the titles of the stories, which it's just titles of the stories, so you know, I don't remember which ones they were, so I'm just like, okay, great, I read the outline. It's not helpful for me.
Well, I mean,
it's not gonna make me
fairness,
any more
usually
prepared.
The outline's done more than 20 minutes before we start recording.
See, I didn't know though. It's fine, I just opened it.
Kristen, actually, things that are useful for you to have open while we're talking. Wikipedia actually has a list of every single story and then who the character was that it focuses on. So if you just need quick reference, yeah.
That actually is so helpful.
If you Google from a certain point of view and then table of contents, the Wikipedia article should pop right up. And it's got a little chart.
Oh, I love them. They're so helpful to us.
I know. Thanks,
and
Wookiees.
Everybody always. I know. Thanks, Wookiees.
They're on Twitter. We should get them to follow us.
We should. Didn't we have our first Wookiee mention? No, I guess he got mentioned a couple times when we were in the cantina. But he was mentioned like once during this situation.
Yes. Hey, we follow Wikipedia. Follow back, yo.
I don't know who runs their Twitter, but please follow us back. We're a good time.
A Wookiee.
People tell us.
A Wookiee runs it.
I know,
literally,
but we don't know which Wookiee is what I'm saying. Not all Wookiees are the same, guys.
It is a group of Wookiee scholars, okay?
Okay, that's fair. See, but we don't
know. The Wookiee High
fair.
Council.
I wonder who the Wookiee social media specialist is.
The Kashyyyk story group.
True.
Oh, that's really cute. Okay, we can actually talk about the book now.
Yeah, this is going to go down just a weird, weird rabbit hole. We're just going to be making noises at each other. So let's just start. One thing that I really noticed in this series of stories that we read this time was that we get kind of the similar view of the everyday Imperios that we've talked a lot about in both this book and in previous books. But you get a more sinister view of it. Like, before, we got, like, kind of the day-to-day, like, you know, like, I think we, like, titled an episode, like, Did My Laundry Water in Hyperspace or something. Like, you get, like, the monotony of it. But here, since we're, like, very much tied to the timing and characters of A New Hope, you get the people doing their jobs. And, you know, you have, for every mundane Sith of Data Work character, you get a change of heart or an end of watch. And you kind of get the more sinister view of Imperials doing their jobs. And I don't know, I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because where we've, like, talked a lot of in the past on this topic about like how, oh, they're people just like us. Like here we kind of get the view like they're people just like us who are doing very bad things.
Just so bad. Just super duper bad.
They are, in fact, super duper bad. I actually wanted to talk about Change of Heart because not only was it a hard-hitting story, but I was really interested in just the form and what it did. Because I remember back before the book came out, as part of their publicity run-up to its publication and release, Del Rey's social media put out 40, I think they called them story cards, I think. And they just had a, you know, the name of the story and the author and then a little quote from, you know, whatever story it was. And I believe this is the only story in the entire collection that is written in second person. And everyone saw that and they were like, huh, second person, edgy, what the fuck? Which I feel like is everyone's reaction to second person because they're just like, what the fuck, why? Are you 15 years old and you're writing fanfic? No, hang on.
No, I know. Sorry, I bet you're about to make the same point that I was just about to make, so keep going.
Okay. But I actually felt like it really worked well here and worked towards Chris's point just because if we're talking about people who are ordinary people who are still doing terrible things under the Empire, we're talking about complicity, which is honestly a really important thing to talk about right now in light of what all fuck shit has been happening in this country. And what the second person does is it turns you into this imperial, not officer, but like, you know, lackey person who's ambitious, who's striving, he just wants to like get up the career ladder and all that, even though he has to watch people being tortured all the time. And it just invites the reader to actually step into that person's shoes, and it puts you immediately right up against the horror of it all, because we've all seen A New Hope a million billion times. We know what happens to Leia when Sedentary Creator Droid like floats into the room. We know what her reaction is, that super emotional reaction, obviously, when Alderaan blows up. But to see it from a different angle and then have it again be made new and immediate, I thought was just a fascinating thing that Elizabeth Wine did with it.
I think my favorite reaction was Chuck Wendig, who just like jokingly was like, second person, flips a fucking table. Just because, as some of our listeners know, Chuck Wendig's book Aftermath was got very mixed reactions from many people on Twitter, who, when asked about why they didn't like it, would hem and haw about how they didn't like that it was in first person, when in reality and some people didn't like the writing, and that's fair, but it often became coded language for the fact that it had a gay character.
People can eat my ass.
People can, yes. Yeah, sorry, Kate. That did get edited out of the last episode. The last episode was heavily edited.
That is so totally okay.
But I didn't edit it out because you said eat my ass. I edited it out for other reasons. I would never take that from you.
God
anyway,
damn it.
So, well, I think obviously what Kate said about complicity is, that's correct, right? Complicity. Sorry.
Yes,
it
ma'am.
Is one of those words. Thank you.
And now it's just making me think of the Saturday Night Live Ivanka's fragrance sketch.
Oh, I have not seen it, but is the fragrance called Complicity?
It's called Complicit, yeah.
Because that's fucking funny. Oh, SNL, you're so problematic and yet occasionally funny. Anyway, I think like it's important obviously to talk about complicity, but it's also important to talk about just like the evil fuckers who are at the middle of this, and how they're, you know, like Tarkin, who's the fucking worst, continues to be the fucking worst. Like, not only is he the worst, but he like makes fun of Krennic for like being the worst, but like not good at being the worst. Like, he's like, Krennic doesn't really know what he's doing. Like, he's a fucking idiot. He doesn't understand politics. Whereas, like, all along, Krennic You know, we get, I'm not going to remember the story that it's in, but it's one with like the flashbacks back and
yep,
forth.
Verge of Greatness by Pablo Hidalgo, by Kate's favorite, Pablo Hidalgo.
Thanks, Pablo.
Fuck you,
no, but
Chris.
I actually thought that was a really, great way to kind of put things in perspective. Cause we get, you know, we understand that, Krennic has the mind of an engineer, so you know he would be extremely thorough if he had been alive, and he would have tried to put a pause on the Death Star and find out whatever Galen did to fuck with it. And he knows, even as he's like being engulfed in flames, that that is not the case for our least favorite Grand Moff. And he's fucking right.
Yeah, and I really liked that story, because, and this is jumping ahead a little bit on our outline, but I loved how, so in the first couple episodes, we talked about how this introduces us to all these new characters and the side characters, and that's the beauty of this book. But in this section, we got a lot of kind of new angles on known characters, which we didn't get so much in the first few. And we got Boba Fett, I guess, in Added Muscle by Paul Dini, but that's pretty much the only one. And I thought it added so much depth to Tarkin, just like kind of like understanding the lengths and the years over which he plotted and like basically just waited for Krennic to do the work so he could take the credit. And the, like, I loved the poetry of Krennic was a nerd, like, masquerading as a leader, and Krennic was like, Tarkin's a politician masquerading as an architect. And it's just like, they're so perfect for each other, and so because they're just like so the same and diametrically opposed at the same time. And I just thought that added a lot to Tarkin's character.
It just shows how different and yet still incredibly horrible they all are. Like, everybody at the center who really thinks, like, Palpatine needs to be in power, and that everybody that doesn't believe that needs to fucking get crushed. They're all just different flavors of the same fucking dog-eat-dog bullshit.
They're all trash babies in a very similar way, and it's kind of ridiculous how similar they can be.
Yeah, while, like, specifically speaking about their dissimilarities in their minds. I'm like, well, I think, like, you'd both be willing to, like, kill the other one, so I don't think you're that dissimilar.
Similar and also super gay. Like, can we talk about this?
Yes.
Like, this is something that I saw on Twitter before I read the book. I want to say it was at ShannonJoy22. Is that her handle?
Hey, Shannon. 26. Excuse the fuck out of you.
I actually thought it was 26 and then second-guessed myself. So, just like on the SATs, always go with your gut. I want to say it was at ShannonJoy26 who tweeted this at some point, that basically, from a certain point of view, really kind of writes Tarkin and Krennic as closeted gay men who hate each other because they're attracted to each other. And I admittedly am not an authority on this subject and not the person to ask, but holy crap, did I get that vibe.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that Rogue One in the first place kind of codes Krennic as being queer just because of his absolute obsession with Galen and his real feelings of personal betrayal when he finds out. Well, first of all, when Galen fucks off the first time, he has to go, you know, fucking track him down and, you know, murder people along the way, but whatever. And when he finds out that Galen's put some kind of defect in the Death Star, he really takes it to heart. And I can't imagine that
he loses his goddamn mind.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, no.
Which I know you.
Yes,
remember,
yes. He absolutely loses his shit.
He loses his goddamn mind.
Exactly. And you know, I really don't think you react that kind of way unless you feel a certain, you know, personal and emotional closeness to a person. And we're not going to read Catalyst for like a while, but I think, you know, I'm hoping we'll get a little bit more textual evidence towards that theory. Tarkin, though, is really interesting just because in pretty much every single medium we see him in, whether it's on film or in the cartoons. And Chris, I think I asked you about the Tarkin novel, And I think you said it was similar in the fact that he's always just this really precise, very conniving military guy. He's kind of the non-force sensitive counterpart to Palpatine, really. He's always playing the long game. And he has this absolutely perfect facade. And I think, I don't know how people are viewing his sexual orientation and identity. I think a lot of people, just because of that, read him as asexual. But I mean, there's no other, there's no reason why he couldn't be attracted to dudes. We don't really have any evidence either way, which is kind of the problem with Star Wars when it comes to queer representation, but whatever.
Except for in one of the stories that we've read this week.
Yeah, that, and that's exactly what I was going to talk about next, because it's not just in Verge of Greatness that we get implications that Tarkin is gay. We also, depending on how you read it, and Kristen, I actually want to know what your reaction was to of MSC6 and men.
That's a joke about mice, of mice and men, guys. It's a good one, because they're little mice droids.
It sure is, Keeks. It sure is.
I'm quitting the pod.
But like, I, and so before I like put anything in your head, Kristen, who did you think the like secret Imperial officer was?
I did not like attribute his identity to anybody, but I think it's totally fair that it definitely could have been Tarkin.
Yeah, because I think I brought Kate around to this, but I don't know that it necessarily occurred to her at the beginning.
It did not. It had not until you said it.
I 100% read it as Tarkin. Like, that's
interesting. Why did you read it as... Can I ask you, like, how you got to that?
No. We're just going to move on, Kristen. I'm not going to make my
fuck
point.
Fuck you. This is a podcast. You have to answer me.
No, well, because, like... Because when TK421 is, like, kind of talking to MSE... whatever his number was. The mouse droid.
It's G7.
G7. Thank you. When TK421 is talking to G7, he's, you know, talking about how... I think the first inkling you get is how he's got a lot on his plate right now, that you get that it's someone high up. And then later, TK421 is again talking to G7 and talking about how Tarkin or his partner had a really good day. Had a good presentation. It went real, really well. Really explosive.
It wasn't even 421 who said that. It was Tarkin himself who was talking to G7.
Oh, fair. And also just the fact that TK421 was like, yo, screw the original plan of getting like posted to Coruscant. We're going to be posted up in a fucking penthouse, like just being a fucking trophy husband. Like, he knew that if he played his cards right, he'd have it made. So, like, that's how I kind of interpreted it as Tarkin. I also potentially interpreted it as Moti, Admiral Moti.
Sure. Also, to be fair, I think the other clue you get is that whoever this Imperial officer is, he has, like, what is it, like, Alpha 1 clearance?
Yes, exactly. That's the other one. Yeah. When G7 is, like, looking at people's clearance levels, he has, like, the highest clearance. And so you know that it's immediately that it's somebody very high up. And so between that and the explosive comment, I kind of inferred that it's Moti or Tarkin, and just kind of the verbiage that he uses is very dignified, very flowery language that is kind of reminiscent of Peter Cushing's performance.
Yeah, that was one of the things that cemented that theory for me that you brought up, Chris, about that it was Tarkin.
Yeah, and I mean, if it is Tarkin, that shows us such a wonderful, interesting side to Tarkin, other than him being just, like, a total fucking piece of shit. Just because, like, you can tell that whoever this officer is, let's, for the sake of the podcast, say it's Tarkin, it's very much sexual, but he also, you can tell he really cares about, like, both the stormtrooper as well as, like, the mouse droid. He's like... Some fucked up shit happened. They stuffed his body into a crawl space. But if you would like to today, little small mouse droid, you can watch us blow up a planet. Like, it's just the funniest, cutest thing I've ever heard about the most fucked up thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was horrifyingly touching.
Yeah, exactly, Chris.
It's also so sad. Like, he had real feels for this dude.
That's what I'm saying, man, for sure.
And hilariously, it was his fault that he died because he's the one who got him posted to the security.
I mean, why do you think he's so fucking upset about it?
That's a great point.
You know, besides not being able to bone anymore, but...
Well, I'm... let's open the problematic nature of the military up. I'm sure he'll find another stormtrooper. Anyway.
But he doesn't because he dies.
I know.
Also,
the best part.
As much as I kind of want to just leave it that just like totally fell flat. No, I was like laughing to myself, but I was on mute.
No, well, that it's fine. I usually edit that laughing out anyway, so everybody thinks that we don't think each other's funny. I do that on purpose.
Well, that's fine.
I don't think either of you are funny at all.
We're the worst.
I'm like two episodes behind on the pod, like listening to it myself, and I just today listened to the one where I like make a really shitty like deep cut joke to Kate, and she like understands what I mean, and she's like, but it wasn't funny. I'm like, it doesn't matter that it wasn't funny. What matters is that you got it.
Thank you, Chris, for that. Totally unnecessary callback that I probably will edit out.
Marriage.
I presented it with the confidence of a mediocre white man, Kristen.
You sure did, Chris. Yeah, so I think we've kind of like mishmashed points 2 and 3 on the outline together, but I think that's totally kind of the point of the stories that we read this time around, because I mean, we get all kinds of new stuff about Imperials, but they're also like vaguely known characters. So we're getting all of this new information about them.
Well, before we move on to some other characters that we like get a new angle, a new point of view on, I want to like kind of go back to that first point that we were talking about, the everyday Imperials. And like, it was really... the story that I loved, but that was almost like kind of hard to read for me, was End of Watch. And that was about, I want to say Commander Poole. But basically the security officer running the station with which Han has a boring conversation when they send a squad up to the detention block. Basically the people who are in charge of watching security when Luke and Han break into the prison block. And it was amazingly written and it was hilarious. But it was, I don't know, it was a little bit hard to read because to me, like, obviously the comparison to the Empire is always the Nazis, right? Like, that's like, fascism is always the easy comparison. And it's the, you know, very intentional, but it's the these people are people too of the death camp guards. You know, like, he is literally a prison guard, and like, he's got qualms about it, but he's still doing his job and sending a squad up. Like he like kind of questions, like, wait, there's a princess? Why do we have a princess imprisoned?
It's a woman. It's not a he.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, you're right. I totally knew that. Apologies.
Excuse the fuck out of you,
Commander Poole. But she like, she has qualms. She's like, princess? Why are we holding a princess? I thought we were after rebels. And like, but she still does her duty. And it's that kind of groupthink mentality of, I have qualms, but I'm not going to question my supervisor, that like is how these tragedies happen. And so that was like, and I loved this story. Like, this is not a criticism at all, but just in like the best possible way, that was actually kind of a really hard story for me to read.
I mean, it goes back again to the question of complicity, doesn't it? Like, it's again, it's a...
I just edited out 30 minutes of mom and dad fighting. But Chris, did you
Kristen,
have
mom and dad weren't fighting, mom and dad were having a discussion,
having
fuck you,
a
Chris,
loud discussion in my ears. Perfect. Did you have additional points about the End of Watch?
Nope, that was about it. Just that I loved it and felt squicky reading it.
Yep. Speaking of squicky,
a better transition, Kate, than I ever could have come up with.
Speaking of squicky, Kate, do you want to talk about weird force shit?
Aphra and Eclipse.
Okay, but I thought, like, we're,
look
we're
at Kristen.
Fluid in our
still
outline.
Missing points in the outline. No, this isn't even Kristen's fault. We're just skipping all over the outline here.
Well, we are. That's why I was like, well, it's fine. We'll come back to it.
Nope.
Because I didn't want to say speaking of queer because that was like a while ago. So I didn't want to be like Afra. I wanted Kate to be able to talk about weird force shit if she wanted to.
I mean, Kristen, we're, in a podcast that's 2/3 queers, I think we could pretty much always say speaking of queer.
That's fair. Good point.
Kate breathes, speaking of queer.
Oh my God.
So let's talk about Afra since we're speaking of queers.
Quitting the pod.
Times in a row.
Is it just making me like remember all those like tweets about Thanksgiving where people were like just like cracks about how like how wholesome like Thanksgiving is and people just like like quote tweeting it with like stares in Native American, like stares in queer.
I really wish y'all could see the glare I'm giving Chris right now because it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, well, Grandma, if she'll let anybody take a photo of her, which she won't, she never does.
Bitch,
anyway, no. No, we need to, speaking of queer, we need to take a picture of your pork on board.
Oh, it's been taken, my friend.
Oh, I love it.
Wait, did we decide it's a queer pork?
I'm queer, motherfucker!
Yes, I'm familiar. Thank you, dear.
I thought that was our new blanket transition instead of yes.
Yes. Okay. No, we're doing it. We're doing it.
I'm so angry.
Okay. So, it's funny that we're even talking about Afra because we have as part of like the outline right now is just all the fucked up shit that Imperials do. Whereas like I don't know whether notably, but I have purported on this podcast in the past that I think Afra's a psychopath and lacks empathy, or at least a sociopath. However,
and then
she, I don't know, she didn't really disprove herself per se because she was like, I don't want to waste these landmines on stormtroopers, lol.
Yeah, she,
but
she did not shoot the stormtrooper, but she was also like, fuck, that was a stupid decision.
Right. I don't know. What did you think, Kate? I just loved having Afra back because she's the shit, so.
Oh, absolutely. And it was kind of interesting to see her. Obviously, we've only read her in comic form so far. But, you know, when you have to read her out of a short story where there are no zero pictures, you really get a lot more of her voice. And I really, really love that aspect of it. She's just so much fun. Like, it just, let me have a whole book of her.
Absolutely, please.
I will say, now that we're not reading any of the Marvel comics, as we've talked about a few episodes ago, the one part of, well, there's a few parts of that make me sad because I love the whole Darth Vader comic, but I think the thing that makes me most sad is just that we're not going to be discussing Afra on the pod as much.
Same.
And she's just such a fantastic character. And what struck me is, in listening to 3 weeks ago's podcast today, don't do as I do, kids. But we kind of talked in that episode where we were talking about Star Wars Volume 2 and Darth Vader Volume 2 about how Afra kind of works uniquely as a comic character because you get this internal monologue but combined with the visual of her, and it's really powerful. And I feel like what the trigger by also Darth Vader author Kieran Gillen showed us is that, no, Afra contains multitudes. Afra can stand the test of different media.
Because queers are awesome.
Yep. Was anybody else reading that? Like, I want... Because she kept hinting at, like, murder droids vaguely. Like, these are things that I've done before. murder droids.
Here are my future... Here are my future plans.
Please just talk more about the murder droids. I love them so much.
Here are my future plans. Gonna acquire me some murder droids, and it's gonna be great.
Yeah, because this is pre-murder droids, right?
I don't know how they're going to work 000 and BT into other media besides the comics, but they're so good.
They need to, because they're so funny. Like, I wonder if she needs the thing that she's looking for. I'm so good with nomenclature. I wonder if she needs what she's looking for to, like, get the droids all booted back up. Who knows?
Oh, you mean the tool or whatever to...
yeah, like the thing that she's like in the rebel base trying to find.
Yeah, I don't think she ever got it. It's really a tragic story.
Chris forgot the name of something in Star Wars. I'm just rip in peace, Chris. But yeah, who wants to talk about how bad Eclipse fucked them up? Speaking of queer.
Oh my god, Donnie, I can't even start.
Me? Oh my god.
Oh my god, it was so bad.
It was terrible.
That's the worst one in the book so far, I think.
Agree. Totally agree. I mean, I was, you know, I mean, the fucking story's called Eclipse. I knew it was going to happen, but it was, I didn't anticipate how much it would just, like, tear my heart out to finally have a piece of media in Bray's voice and see up close her relationship with Bale and how much they loved each other, and then oh, the ending where Alderaan's getting blown up and they're just like, it, like, oh, well, at least we're together while we're fucking dying. And I was just like,
Yeah, I mean, I think that fucked me up even more. And I think this is kind of the point of, like, releasing Rogue One, is to just show everybody what it's like if you have a planet attacked by the Death Star. Like, that's basically, there were, like, two very gratuitous scenes in that movie where, like, there is a horizon of death coming towards you. And I think that just gives us that, and that it's, I mean, it was quote unquote really well done for like how horrific it was. But I think that really like puts a real picture on it, that it's like not totally instantaneous, right? Like we have this horrible, you know, the Death Star blocks out the sun and then we get hit with the wave of death. Like that's
Kristen,
fucked.
Yeah. Alderaan had a moon for only one day.
LOL, I know.
No, but that's a great point, though, Kristen, because, like, in the original Star Wars, like, obviously it's awful that Alderaan gets blown up, but you kind of get this implication, I guess, just because of the limits of the visual effects of the time, that, like, it's kind of like they're there 1 minute and they're dead the next, and there's no pain, and they're just dead. Like, or at least that was kind of the implication I always got. Whereas Rogue One changed that with, like, how long the scene of Jedha blowing up was. And this, even though I feel like maybe it was a little quicker because it was a stronger explosion, like there was a solid like 30 seconds or so where, I mean, not even including when they were staring at the Death Star, like knowing what was going to happen, there's a solid 30 seconds where the planet is falling apart and they know that they have already died and there's nothing they can do about it.
And that goes back to what Aphra says in her story, about how, like, we, you know, I think we as audience members didn't quite, like, have a face to put on that until we got all this backstory, right? So, and the really interesting thing is that we got all this backstory, I mean, character-wise, about Bale and Brea and, you know, everybody else who was on Alderaan before Rogue One came out. But then once Rogue One came out, then it just, like, fucked us up even worse. Because then we, like, had a really rich visual representation of what that was like.
Right. I think it's kind of interesting what canon has done with destruction by Death Star, especially in the wake of The Force Awakens, because it almost seems like Starkiller Base is so much worse, because you've got these just giant horrible beams of light like spreading out, like coming at your planet, and you see it and you can see it from far away. You know, there's that scene on Hosnian Prime where the people can, like, they know they're about to die because the signs are so obvious. And like Chris, like you were saying, we never had such an inkling when it came to destruction by the Death Star. And then Rogue One came out and it's like, oh, that's just fucking great. Like, it's like, it's worse. Just because I guess the technology wasn't as good and the Death Star wasn't as big as Starkiller Base. Like, it just takes so much longer. Like, the actual, you know, dying part of it, never mind the, oh, this thing is this large planet-like object or moon-sized object is fucking approaching my planet. What the hell?
Yeah, it's very K2. There is no horizon. Like, thanks, K2.
Yep.
Yeah. And one other thing that really struck me about this story, just to kind of talk a little bit about the craft of it for a second. I feel like Madeline Rue really just captured in a perfect microcosm the challenge and value of what a lot of Star Wars media is doing right now. And that's taking a story where we know the characters and we know what's going to happen and we know where it's going to end up and making us care about it anyway. And that's kind of what Rogue One was, right? Like, we knew that it was, like, we didn't know all the plot. We didn't know they were all going to die. But we knew that it was about getting to Death Star plans. And we knew that we didn't see any of these characters again.
We didn't know that they were all going to die.
I mean, we suspected. But, like, but, and so.
Sorry, like, that's kinda... I'm just like, didn't we? Yes.
Maybe I'm naive and was like, oh, Disney wouldn't
kill them all. Stop having a soft heart, Chris. Everybody dies.
Wow.
No, but I mean, that's kind of it. Just like, I feel like Madeline Rue did a really great job with, and that story is kind of the perfect example of the challenge of Star Wars, but also how poignant it can be when done right. All right, so speaking of queer, Kate, let's talk about Weird Force shit.
Oh my fucking God. So, I'm not even mad. I just, all right.
It's better than yes.
Speaking of queer is definitely the episode title, in case anybody was unclear on that.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Kate, please lead the discussion in Weird Force shit. As everybody knows, Kate loves Weird Force shit. She is the Weird Force shit ambassador of the pod.
I thought you were going to say, I embody Weird Force shit, and I was about to be like, okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, I did not say that. I just...
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Kate is a loath cat.
I'm the white loath
cat. She's a loath wolf, actually.
Small loath wolf.
Doom.
Thanks, guys.
I'm such a child.
Oh my God, we're so weird today. Anyway, so Weird Force shit.
Star Wars comes out tomorrow. That's why we're like this.
Do we need to drink more or should we drink less? That's my question.
You guys aren't even drinking.
Oh, wait. I'm fucking drinking.
I forgot.
F you. I forgot. Okay, Weird Force shit. Let's go. In honor of The Last Jedi, which I think is going to be full of Weird Force shit. I'm so excited. Anyway. So one of the things that we've been talking about a little bit as we've gone through the book is what further insights we're gaining into the nature of the Force and being Force sensitive and how Force ghosts work, etc., blah, blah, blah. So we get some more, peeks into that sort of thing, with the last two stories in this section that we read, The Baptist by Nnedi Okorafor and Time of That by Kaven Scott. And I really want to talk about The Baptist, because it was fascinating, not just because it gave voice to the fucking trash compactor monster of all things, but it made it this mystical, Force-sensitive being that, you know, it, you know, Omi kept having this vision that she was going to die in this horrible fireball, and yet she felt compelled, she felt chosen to, you know, keep living her life for that, just for that moment where she could wrap her slimy tentacles around Luke, dunk him in garbage water, and basically bless him to go forth and become the founder of the new Jedi Order, which was wild. And furthermore, the story was made more amazing by the fact that Okorafor took what was already a really fascinating angle on A New Hope, and she made it into a slave narrative, which was, because, I mean, if you look at the structure of it and the path that Omi's story takes, you know, she's taken from her homeland by strangers and who from a culture that she doesn't recognize and who doesn't recognize hers or recognize, you know, that she's sentient or anything like that, brings her to this strange, like, totally foreign place that she, in an environment that she is, you know, not built for and not used to, and puts her to work, just, like, literally eating scraps and living in the dark. And what is that a parallel for if not, you know, slavery, especially American slavery. And it's, I think it's also really important to note here that Okorafor is Nigerian American. Her parents are from Nigeria, so she's really close to those kinds of narratives.
I have nothing to add. That was,
I know, that was
the story perfect, was perfect, Kate. And that was an excellent analysis of it.
Thanks, guys.
Yes. Thank you for that, Kate. Yeah, we.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm out of transitions. Fucking, I'm sorry.
Fucking head mouth
keep
shut.
Fucking that chicken.
But yeah, I mean, I did really enjoy the force shit in that story, and just like her, like very obvious kind of like mysticism and understanding of the world around her in a way that like none of us had thought of. I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's just like another instance where from a certain point of view really turns, you know, challenges the reader to look at things in a different way. And, you know, we figure out how she knows about the trash compactor actually compacting. And
I'm not going to lie, when I was a kid, sorry, Keeks, I just cut you off.
No, I had nothing else to say, so thank you for saving me.
I'm not going to lie. When I was a kid and watching Star Wars, honest to God, one of my biggest questions was, but how did the trash monster not die every time the trash compactor went off? Like, I was really concerned about this trash monster getting smushed into a pancake by these moving walls in the fucking machine. Like, 5-year-old me was really scared about that. Should we move on to other weird force shit?
Please, Kate.
All right. Well, let's talk about Time of Death, in which Obi-Wan is stuck in the weirdest fucking time loop of all time in the Force because the Force is fucking weird. Chris, you stuck this one on the outline, honestly, so do you want to...
There's so much to talk about in this story, and yet there's nothing at all. Like, you know, like, I feel like this is just one of those stories that you read, and it's just, like, blowing my mind... But it's blowing my mind with just, like, in a completely logical way. And I just, like, everything in that story made sense to me and yet was wild.
Okay, fine. I'll talk about it. Fuck you.
Please. I have nothing helpful to say either. Sorry. I, like, totally agree with Chris. I'm like, there were things that happened. I mean, he's, like, kind of, he's caught in a loop. But it's very mystical. It's my input.
It's your very Canadian input.
That's right.
So upset. Okay. So obviously he's stuck in this like weird time loop where he keeps, you know, reliving his time of death where Vader just, you know, murders the living crap out of him.
Eyes, saber, slash, scream, pain.
Thank you, Chris.
That thing, yep.
Yes. Two interesting things to note here for me. I think a question that a lot of people have is what the fuck did Obi-Wan do for 19 years crying in the desert besides crying and learning how to become a Force ghost? And apparently one of the things he did was fuck up his chances of being any part of Luke's life right off the bat. I think Luke is like how old? I think like 3 years old, right? In the story. And, you know, when... or, you know... In this story, he's 3 years old in one of Obi-Wan's memories, whatever. He's kind of just reliving both the moment of his death and this moment where he sensed that Luke was in trouble and he went to the Lars Moisture Farm and fended off a bunch of Tusken Raiders and he used his lightsaber to do so. And Luke, and you know, Luke already at 3 years old was already like... super brave, super ready to fight, super ready to stand up for the safety of the people he cared about. And even Obi-Wan, who he didn't really know. You know, he has that selfless streak in him. And Obi-Wan is, like, kind of proud to see that. And Owen is scared. And I think that's just such a brilliant encapsulation of the difference between these two men who both want the same thing. They both want to raise Luke, right? And they both want him to be safe. But they have very different opinions on how to do so, which is really fascinating. And at the end of the day, Owen's method wins out for 19 years and Obi-Wan only gets to watch Luke from afar. And to be fair, when he takes Luke to Tatooine when he's a baby, Obi-Wan promises that he'll watch over Luke, and he never says he'll raise him or get involved or train him. But there's still that instinct in him to, you know, make him his apprentice, to like teach him something about the Force, and he never gets a chance to do that. And it's almost like it's fate for how Anakin got kind of thrown into his lap and became his Padawan, and he totally fucked up, you know, like Anakin went to the dark side. And the other thing here is that when Obi-Wan dies, it's not like he is able to marshal his Force powers or whatever you want to call it, consciousness and all that immediately, even though he's been training all this time with Qui-Gon to be able to do so. It's almost like he has to have this realization that, you know, he's, you know, that he's kind of a fuck up, and the reason why at least some of the people in his life who have gotten hurt, because I mean, Lord knows people just drop like flies around Obi-Wan, is because he fucked up. And it's almost like he has to go through this trial, I think, here. Like the Force, you hear about Jedi trials to make, that decide whether or not a Padawan is worthy and ready to become a knight. The Force kind of makes him go through this trial to see if he's master enough of the Force to be able to come back as a Force ghost. I don't know. It's another side of the Force that we haven't seen. You know, when Obi-Wan comes back and Empire Strikes Back and is a Force ghost, it seems easy. You know, he just whoosh, there he is, and blue glowy shit around him, and just, you know, it seems simple. But I kind of wonder how long he really struggles even after his death with, you know, not only becoming, you know, so in control of the Force that he's able to have these abilities, but also, you know, coming to terms with all the crap he's done in his life.
I lied. I have 2 points. One, I totally agree.
Twist.
Twist. Chris is going to talk more. I totally agree with
white people.
Yep. With your point that it's a test of sorts. And if you kind of take this paired with Claudia Gray's Master and Apprentice story, which we talked about in episode 28, it's Obi-Wan talks about how Obi-Wan's death is coming, but the nature of the Force is such that his journey is just beginning. And that transformational aspect. So I totally agree with that. And the second is, I think that the choice to embrace his physical death, become one with the Force, and reach out to Luke and start training him and accept that new relationship is the first conscious choice that we ever get to see Obi-Wan Kenobi make.
You just blew my fucking mind.
Because yeah. he doesn't choose to be a Jedi. The Jedi take him. Like, let's be clear. Nobody chooses to become a Jedi except Anakin. Anakin is the one person that we know of in history who has chosen to become a Jedi when he was old enough to do so. Because everybody else is taken when they're young, and they just go. Like, and Luke, of course. Luke chooses to become a Jedi.
And Ezra,
that's fair. But in the Old Republic time, nobody chooses to become a Jedi except Anakin. So he doesn't choose that. He doesn't choose to graduate from his Padawanhood. Qui-Gon kind of shoves him out. He doesn't choose to take Anakin as his Padawan. We've, you know, explored that in the Star Wars comics. We've explored that in Master and Apprentice. There's somewhere else where it's explored that I can't remember right now. He doesn't choose that.
It's in Ahsoka.
It's in Ahsoka. Thank you. Yes. Him questioning if Qui-Gon, what would have been different if Anakin questioning what would have been different if Qui-Gon had not died. So he doesn't choose that. He doesn't choose to obviously leave the Jedi Order because it's all taken from him by Anakin. He doesn't choose he doesn't choose what to do with Anakin. He like has the option to choose to kill him, and he does not choose that. He says the Force will do what it will, and he washes his hands of it. And he doesn't choose not to train Luke. He's not allowed to. Like his intention was fully to train Luke when he got to Tatooine, and he was not allowed to do that. And so I feel like this is kind of the ultimate, not redemption, obviously, because Obi-Wan he's the one character in Star Wars who doesn't need redemption, but like it's kind of a fulfillment moment for him of, in a life that has been laid out for him, And just to kill Kate, another thing he doesn't get to choose is his life with Satine or not.
Absolutely. He puts that in her hands, doesn't he?
Exactly. And so the one choice, meaningful choice, that Obi-Wan gets to make in his life is to die a physical death in the manner of his choosing.
I'm like crying inside right now. This
is... Yeah, it's fucking depressing, Chris. Oh. Let me make like my one super obvious middle school point, and then we can move on to...
Oh, please.
What story stood out for us, even though we kind of touched on them a little bit already, but we'll make it quick. But I think the other thing, Chris is totally correct, but I think there's also like quite an overtone of the force versus choice in this story generally, because we get, you know, Obi had kind of quote unquote full control over Anakin's training, and he turned to the dark side anyway, whereas he has such like a small but large part in Luke's training before he dies, and obviously he has yet, to our knowledge, to go to the dark side. So I mean, you can kind of say like, yeah, if he would have trained Luke, Luke also would have gone to the dark side, if you want to be really fucked up. But I guess I'm just kind of saying that there's this weird like overtone of lack of choice, and it's linked to the Force, but also like in the way that Chris was talking about, that Obi hasn't had choice for a variety of reasons, one of them being the Force.
Absolutely.
As usual, you do a really good job of taking both of our points and marrying it into something like... No, it's good. Like you're like, I'm not saying you're like summarizing. I'm saying you're actually like pulling out cogent points and like distilling
them.
Yeah,
I try to.
I just
once in a while I have a cogent point.
I mean, I talk for 3 minutes and I don't know what I'm saying, so whatever.
All right, let's talk about shit that we liked. Stories that stood out from this section. As you guys know, I'll get it out of the way. I loved the hearing the other side of the Han conversation, because you know the boring conversation anyways. Like, it's probably my favorite scene in like all of Star Wars. So I really, 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 really enjoyed that and laughed my ass off, even though it was like a really fucked up deep story.
Oh my god,
so
that was
my thing.
Absolutely hysterical. I actually,
that was also one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard. I one of the best parts of that story is that Han has a lot of, you know, pause in the story here where he pauses in that conversation where he's like, please don't come down. And author literally just like transliterated that shit into the story, and I was screaming.
I think my favorite part of it was that they were like almost about to be like, this is weird, but seems fine. And then Han's like, how are you? And they're like, all right, that's weird. No stormtrooper asks how we are.
God damn it.
So perfect. For me, it was that, and it was Of MSC 6 and Men by Glenn Weldon, which you already talked about. I just thought that the way that story was done was so creative, and so just in it, in a franchise in which we hear from droids so much, to finally get a story from a droid. And obviously we got that from R5-D4 in The Red One by Ray Carson earlier in the book. But to get it in droid speak, essentially, like to see the commands like rebooting, checking systems, rotors subpar, wheels fine, hollow recorder fine, all these other things, like reactor fine, like just to like have to sort through, for lack of a better term, the like the technical readouts of this droid, and for Glenn Weldon to do that and make it so fascinating was just amazing.
I fully expected Change of Heart and Eclipse to fuck me up when Del Rey was putting out those excerpts and the story cards and the publicity run-up to the publication of this book. And they definitely lived up to that. And as y'all may know, I love angst. And so I was just having the feels and just crying to myself on the couch while reading it. And it was cathartic and great. And I also absolutely loved Of MSC 6 and Men. For the very reason Chris stated, this is going to be a little embarrassing, but one of my favorite fanfics of all time is somebody wrote a story from Chopper's point of view where he's, you know, overnight, you know, keeping watch on the ghost while everyone else is sleeping. And it's written in, you know, this faux droid speak binary sort of thing. And it's him going through his commands and his logic. And it's just like hilarious shit. Like if Ezra or Zeb are in the shower, drop the temperature by 20 degrees sort of thing. And it's like that's like, it's all these if then statements, and it's absolutely hysterical. And I was so glad to see that kind of risk taking actually happen in a published book. Also, if you want the fic, like tweet at us and I'll give it to you, because it's seriously worth reading. Yeah.
Also, there was just like gay sex in this book.
Oh yeah, there's which is great. So much gay sex. I really love the bit where TK421 is like, yeah, sorry about the memory wipes, but you didn't need to see that. It gets real messy. And
human stuff.
It's so good.
It's so fucking funny.
Yeah, the other great thing about that story is how well it just combines a weird storytelling format, shit that literally made me just roll around the floor laughing, and then absolute tragedy at the end. Like, Jesus Christ, what a roller coaster ride.
But G7 finally got his racing stripes, and then he died.
You shut up. You shut up, Chris.
I know. Anyway, does that bring us to the end?
I think it does.
Of the podcast?
Let's wrap it up. Thank you all so much for listening to episode 30 of the Book Wars Pod. Next episode, we're going to be finishing up From a Certain Point of View, reading There Is Another by Keeks. Do you have the book in front of you?
Oh, I do. It's not open, but just a moment.
It's by Yoda.
There Is Another by Gary D. Schmidt. We're reading all the way to the end, right?
Yes. So we're reading through Wills by Tom Engelberger. That one I remembered.
Yep, that one he remembers.
So we hope that you'll continue to read along with us and talk to us about how you felt about these stories. Did you also read Tarkin as gay or as in the or as the lover in of MSC6 and Men? Like, how do you feel about all this? We want more interaction with people on Twitter who aren't going to spoil Last Jedi with us.
Okay, I'm sorry, but the way you phrased that, it was just like, did you also think that Tarkin was a lover of the goddamn mouse droid?
Yes. The definitely. Lover. Anyway, Book Wars Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, bookwarspod@gmail.com. Hit us up on email. Please, please do rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play if you haven't already. It is the best way for people to discover the show. And as you listen to this, The Last Jedi is out and people are probably looking for more Star Wars content. So there's no better time than right now to rate, review, and subscribe.
Also, I submitted the podcast to be on Spotify. So if you'd rather listen to us there, hopefully it'll be up soon. And if it's not,
oh, really?
Yes, because yeah. Libsyn finally made it easy for me to poop our podcast off at Spotify. So we'll see how long it takes to get put up. But
thanks, Libsyn. Mm-hmm. Also, if for you thirsty fuckers, we'll put up our Last Jedi reaction and how it ties into the larger universe, as is the point of this podcast, probably like right after Gen 1. So that we give you guys time to go see it at least 15 times before we put it up.
Yep, exactly. And that is it. Thank you again for listening. It's been a wonderful 30 episodes, and we are looking forward to many more. So our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. I am Chris for Kate and Kristen. Thank you for listening to the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week. Go see The Last Jedi.
Bye. What the damn hell was that?
And it's hard because he can't play PlayStation while we're recording because it fucks the internet up.
That so is a struggle. Like,
I have him trapped in this horrible prison where he has to listen to me record the podcast and he can't even fucking play PlayStation on his night off. Poor Quinn.